Hello, and welcome to the inaugural podcast for Redefined. This is a special day for us, and we are fortunate to have here by phone Ben Austin, who is the executive director for the Parent Revolution in California. We asked Ben to join us so that we could learn more about the Parent Revolution, its role as a union for parents, how it sees that responsibility, and hopefully we'll learn more about Ben's next steps in the widely reported story of the parent trigger exercised recently at McKinley Elementary and the Compton Unified School District. So with that, Ben, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me. It's an honor to be on your first podcast.
Thank you. Well, a lot of folks who have a stake or an interest in education reform want to know more about the parent trigger and what it could mean for public education in California and elsewhere if other states follow suit. But I'd like to first ask you to tell us a little bit about the parent revolution, specifically how it got started and what you're trying to accomplish.
Sure. We launched the parent revolution about 2 years ago on Martin Luther King's birthday, and we launched it around a very simple idea that parents should have power over the education of their own children, because parents, above and beyond all other stakeholders, are the only ones without a conflict of interest when it comes to kids. Parents are the only ones who only care about children. And so because there was no real entry point for parents who wanted to get involved beyond, you know, bake sales and PTA meetings, we tried to create one out of whole cloth. We put a video on our website that basically said, it basically made a promise to every parent in Los Angeles that if you organize half the parents at your school, we will guarantee you a great school. And it was a bold and controversial statement, and a statement that, to be frank, you know, we hadn't completely thought through the implications of yet. But we figured that we were living in a revolutionary moment, and we still are living in a revolutionary moment, and that we needed to incentivize parents to rise up and take back their schools. And pretty soon after we put that video up, that's what happened. Parents all across Los Angeles began to organize around this crazy but simple promise. And after a few months, parents at two schools in Los Angeles got together and declared that they had gotten to 51%. And what we did was we marched with them to the school district, and we married them up with a high-quality charter school. But without necessarily the intention of opening up that charter school, the objective was to give parents power to bargain. So they went to the school district, and what they basically said was, look, you know, we're not naive about the politics of education reform. We know when you make big decisions that affect our kids that we're not invited to be at the table. But the two reasons you can't ignore us, you can't ignore this group of parents, is A, we represent half the parents at your school, so you're used to being in control, but we're in control now because we control your enrollment. As long as we act collectively, we literally have the power to shut down your school. And the second reason you can't ignore us is that we have choice. We have the ability to send our kids to a good charter school. So what they basically said was, make us a better deal than a high-quality charter school, or we're going to leave and we're going to shut your school down, and this is going to start happening over and over and over again all across Los Angeles until you, the people in charge of LA Unified, begin to learn how to run schools rooted in what's good for kids rather than what's good for grown-ups. And that really set off a movement that led to the passage of the parent trigger, and led to what happened at McKinley Elementary and Compton Unified, and has led to where we are today, which is parents all across California organizing around parent trigger, and parents and legislators all across America organizing around passing their own parent trigger.
Now, why the parent trigger as opposed to a more collaborative approach with the district? And I ask that question not knowing what form that collaboration might take, but a failing school is a problem that has vexed parent-teacher groups and school advisory councils now for quite some time. So what does the parent trigger provide that other more collaborative approaches might not?
Well, you know, I mean, it's funny. The defenders, I should say as a caveat, I know that you agree and your listeners agree that this is not about demonizing individuals. It certainly is not about demonizing teachers. You can't have a great school without great teachers, and that's why parents and teachers have a whole lot in common when it comes to a kid's first agenda. You know, it's good for kids if teachers are paid a whole lot more money. Good for kids, as well as principals. It's good for kids if teachers are empowered and respected, not micromanaged by bureaucrats who never set foot in their class and never met their kids. But it's good for kids if teachers, as well as principals and parents and all other grown-ups, are held accountable for student performance. That's what the rub is all about. But it is important to recognize as we step into this conversation that we have a whole lot more in common than we have that divides us. But when we talk about a collaborative approach, it's interesting. You know, it is people with power that want a collaborative approach. The problem with that is that the defenders of the status quo have all the power, and parents and kids have no power. And the other point to keep in mind is that the power and money is the language that the other side understands. That is the language they speak in, and if you're not speaking in that language, they're not going to listen to you. I have tried over the course of the last decade, from positions of relative power, to effectuate changes in the education system. I've worked in the White House. I've been a deputy mayor in Los Angeles, and up until quite recently, I was a member of the California State Board of Education. As a member of the State Board of Education, I was technically in charge of setting education policy for the entire state of California. But you and I both know that I really wasn't. You and I both know that, you know, if you're in a position of power, I don't mean to diminish it. It is important to have reformers on the inside, and the work you do on the inside is not meaningless. So you can pass good policies, and on the margins you can make things better. But what you cannot do, what I did not have the power to do from positions of power on the inside, is change the fundamental incentive structures of how the system worked. I could not change the fact that the system as it is designed today is failing because it's not designed to succeed, that it doesn't serve the interests of kids because it's not designed to. It's designed to serve the interests of grown-ups. And the only way we're going to change that is to effectuate a radical and unapologetic transfer of raw power from the defenders of the status quo to parents, because parents have wholly different incentive structures than everybody else, and parents operate on a different clock than everybody else. And their kids get older every day, and that matters. Now, like I said, I don't mean to diminish the importance of having brave people on the inside, and frankly, I think President Obama has been a game changer on the inside. Without race to the top, there is no parent trigger. And so policies on the inside matter, but at the end of the day, we're not going to change the way the system operates, and we're not going to change whom the system serves until parents rise up and take back their schools for their kids.
Now, why a simple majority of 51% to trigger a conversion or an overhaul at a failing public school? Why not a supermajority for a reform many would consider quite sweeping?
Well, I mean, we elect a president of the United States with a simple majority, or in some cases slightly less than a simple majority in your state in Florida. But the reality is, having gone through this in Compton and having been one of the only people that's really ever gone through this from soup to nuts, is that it is incredibly hard to get to 51%. I mean, I really would challenge anybody to point to any school anywhere in America where 51% of the parents agree wholeheartedly on any major issue. And so it is hard to get to 51%, as it should be. If you layer on top of that the fact that the parents in Compton endured threats, endured harassment, endured lies, intimidation, school resources, their own taxpayer dollars used against them in a campaign to to stop them from taking back their school. This is a school where the average child at McKinley Elementary is 50 times more likely to drop out of school than to go to college. It's an utterly indefensible status quo. It's a school that neither you nor I nor any sane parent would choose to send their kids to. But these parents are trapped. They're fighting for a better future for their kids. Their own school district used and continues to use every single resource at their disposal to stop them, because the status quo is not designed to serve their kids. It's designed to serve the adults at the school and in the school district. So 51% is quite difficult to get to in a vacuum, and then we layer on top of that the fact that the grown-ups of the school are very likely going to do everything they can to fight these parents. It's pretty hard to do. And it, frankly, should be pretty hard to do because, as you said, these parents are triggering radical change. For all intents and purposes, they're firing everybody at the school, wiping the slate clean, starting over not just with new employees, but with an entirely new system designed to serve kids rather than adults.
Now, this is just, most of what we're looking at is McKinley so far, and this question may be getting ahead of things considering the struggle these parents have had with the Compton School Board, but where do you see the parent trigger and its implementation years from now? What do you see in the long term?
In the long term, or even in the short term, I do think that McKinley will be the anomaly. I do think that there are parents who will choose to convert their school to charter school, and under the law of the state of California, that is their right. And in some situations, that's going to be the smartest thing for parents to do, especially when you have a school district like Compton Unified that is an abject disaster. I would never in a million years send my two daughters to any school that's run by these people. They're crazy. There are very good school districts throughout California and throughout America. And there are school districts that are, well-intentioned and trying to do the right thing, but maybe need a little bit of a nudge. So I think that most transformative use, and frankly the most scalable use of the parent trigger, will be not using the parent trigger at all. And by that I mean that already there are parents across California that are organizing to get to 51% with no intention of at least initially turning the signatures in. They're organizing to bargain. They're organizing to basically say, look, there's things about our school that we like, but there's things about our school that we don't like, and you haven't listened to us for years. Well, now we have the power to fire you, so you have to listen to us. So the real power, I think, of the parent trigger, the transformative nature of this movement, is not that it is another path for another way to turn a failing school into a charter school, although that is a right, and I think it's an important aspect of this law. But the real transformative aspect of this movement is that it basically allows parents to unionize. With 51% of the parents of the school, it gives them a tremendous amount of power to bargain on behalf of their kids and for the first time sit at a table and be treated like a grown-up political operator, be treated like a teacher's union.
That is a very nice segue into what I wanted to talk about next, which is what a parent union might look like. When the Wisconsin battles reached a fever pitch, we advocated on Redefine for the empowerment of the parents' voice, not the disempowerment of the teachers' union. Of course, we write this without knowing what a parent union might look like, so I'd like to put that question to you since you've begun to phrase that quite eloquently. What would a parent union look like, and what might be their role formally or figuratively at the bargaining table?
Sure. And I say this as a progressive Democrat, as somebody who worked in the Clinton White House, worked on President Obama's presidential campaign, and somebody who supports the rights of workers to unionize. I just fundamentally believe that parents should have that same right. And that the reason why that's transformative in the context of public education is that parents, as we said earlier, just have simply different incentive structures. Parents are the only ones who only care about kids. What would it look like? I think it's pretty simple. I don't think parent trigger is the only path towards a real parents union that has real power, but right now it's the best path. And so in California, as I said earlier, it is parents organizing to bargain. Get to 51%. Once you hit that threshold, it's like card check for parents. Once you hit that threshold, you basically have a tremendous amount of power to bargain on behalf of your kids, to sit at a grown-up negotiating table and get taken seriously by the big boys, to be treated like a teacher's union. And like I said, like you said, we're not for taking power away from teachers' unions. We're just for treating parents the same way.
Now, what demands would a parent union have, or what issues would it bargain for instance?
Sure. I can tell you what, and I say this, I have two young daughters. I may have to do this for my own daughters. So I can tell you what I would want for my own daughters, but I think that, this is not about, you or I deciding for parents what they should want for their kids. I think we all need to work together and educate each other to build this movement, so parents are educated and knowledgeable. But at the end of the day, parents are going to decide what they want for their own kids. So what I would want, what I think is, not the end, but the beginning of a conversation about kids first change. And by kids first change, I mean making every decision at a school site or at a school district or in a state through the lens of whether you would make that same decision if it literally affected your own child. And as motherhood and apple pie as that sounds, it's probably, one of the most radical political agendas in California. I'm a sort of a living proof point to that effect. I was on the State Board of Education for less than a year. I voted every vote as if it would affect my own kids. And frankly, that also meant voting against a lot of charter schools because I voted against charter schools I wouldn't send my daughters to. But in any case, I cast every vote as if it would affect my own daughters, and within a year, I was kicked off of the state board. In any case, the idea of a parents union is to do just that, is to make education about kids and not grown-ups. For me, what I would want, whether I were sending my daughters to a district school or to a charter school, I would want a reform union contract, a contract that you'd write for your own kids. Like I said, we're not against teachers' unions, but I'm against teachers' union contracts like we have in Los Angeles, where they're about 300 pages long, and I would challenge anybody to find one syllable in that 300-page treaties that has anything to do with children. We know that there are good NEA and AFT negotiated contracts all across America that I would want for my own daughters. In Washington, D.C., in New Haven, there's policies that have been passed in Colorado, contracts that have been negotiated in Denver. These are all really good examples of progressive teachers union contracts that, are basically good for kids. And so the first thing I would want for my daughters if I were negotiating as a parent in a parents union is a reform contract that's about kids and not grown-ups. The second thing I'd want is to negotiate real freedoms from a district bureaucracy that was designed to serve a society that basically doesn't exist anymore. I mean, there isn't much about a big city district bureaucracy that has changed since the days of Lyndon Johnson. What a district central office really should be doing is devolving responsibility to the local school sites, devolving money to the local school sites, and then holding schools and holding principals accountable for student performance. It's sort of the opposite of the way districts operate in big cities, especially places like Los Angeles, where they take all the money from the school, they take all the responsibilities from the school, they overregulate the school, and then they don't hold anybody accountable. It's just utter nonsense. So I would want charter-like freedoms from the district bureaucracy, for my teachers and my principal. From there, I think that it really depends on, you know, the situation, the parents, the teachers, and the principal. And I think there can be a lot of collaborative discussions about, you know, smaller issues that could still be quite transformative at an individual school site. So, like I say, like, it really depends on the parents, what they want for their kids. But for me, I do think that the foundation for Kids First Change is a reform union contract so grown-ups are accountable for student performance and freedom from the district bureaucracy so that money goes into the classroom, not into an anachronistic bureaucracy.
Could the PTA fulfill the role of a parent union in the way you're talking about?
Well, theoretically, they could, and I think there are good local PTA chapters. I think the PTA is evolving. We've had good experiences with the PTA and bad experiences with the PTA. We believe there needs to be a lot more P in the PTA. The PTA has not been on the vanguard of change around this movement, but I wouldn't say that is, you know, that couldn't change in the future. I think the PTA was designed for a society where really the only problems at a school, the only problems you had at a school could be solved by, you know, raising some money and doing some volunteer days and some other kind of, marginal changes that basically supported the operations of the school. But we're in a new era, where we need to collectively, change the entire way that school governance operates and change the incentive structures around many of these systems. And the PTA is simply not designed for that. So, I've met some very good people in the PTA, and I think that they could play a very productive role in the future, but it's yet to be seen.
Okay. Well, Ben, this has been a very good conversation. Everybody is watching what's going to be happening next with the story of the parent trigger. We will be too, but I want to close by asking if you have any final words or final thoughts about the subject.
No, I think that the only final thought I would say is organize. Whether you're in California and you already have this right, you can organize around this right, or if you're in the other 90% of the country and you don't have this right, stand up and make sure you get it. I mean, it happened in California through a grassroots movement. It can happen in your state through a grassroots movement. And it's already happening in 12 states, including Florida. So this is a movement that's happening in real time, and I think it's important to kind of look at history, look at the history of other social movements, and recognize that we're living in a revolutionary moment right now, and these moments come and go more quickly than any of us can imagine or predict, and I think the stakes of this moment are quite high. It's whether we can stand up and stand together and seize this moment to take back our schools and transform the way public education operates in the 21st century, or whether we let this moment slip through our fingers and we let the defenders of the status quo steady themselves and figure out how to fight us. And if that happens, then we'll lock in the status quo for a whole new generation of parents and kids. And so we're living in frightening times, but very exciting times. And I think with moments like this come with a lot of responsibility on all of our shoulders. And I think it's incumbent upon all of us to recognize that and act with a real sense of urgency, because tomorrow this opportunity may not exist anymore.
All right. Well, thank you, Ben Austin, Executive Director for the Parent Revolution, for joining us today. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me. You guys are great.
All right.